So we're going to be talking about the fourth Matrix movie. I think we should start off with Larry, who could maybe tell us roughly what the movie's about, just to refresh our memory. He seems to have a vague idea, and then maybe we can get some initial reactions from the panel.
I mean, this movie ends up getting very meta in terms of the commentary about the Matrix legacy while also trying to continue slash reboot the franchise question mark. It's a little unclear as to the goals of this movie. But yeah, a lot of my notes involve numerous question marks, which I think is pretty telling. Overall, I mean, this movie was like very run-of-the-mill, paint-by-numbers milquetoast for me, with some very obvious things that they tried to make surprises, and I was just like, well, I've seen a movie in my life, so this was very predictable. And I mean, for me, the meta commentary section of it did not play well, and I think that's something we can dive into since that was also relatively at the beginning of the movie. World-wise, they're building and introducing stuff of like, okay, here's this guy, Tom Anderson, who we know, but in the world, he doesn't know who he is. And he made this amazing game trilogy back in 1999. That was the Matrix trilogy as a game. But as an audience, we know who he is and what he's done. So there's that reflexiveness. And then we have Jonathan Groff come in and is like, hey, by the way, Warner Brothers wants to make another sequel trilogy and they're going to make it with or without us. Yeah, Warner Brothers wants to, like our parent company, Warner Brothers wants to make a sequel trilogy to the Matrix games and they're going to make it with or without us. And in a movie like this, that's like kind of messing with you when it comes to what's real and what's not. I feel like this kind of meta commentary does not play well. Like, it's not being tongue in cheek like it a little bit was more with like something like 21 Jump Street, where it's a different genre, it's a different kind of movie. They know they're rebooting something and they'll poke fun at it because it's that kind of movie. Whereas with this, you're say like you have all this commentary and it just makes it seem like no one wanted to make this movie.
I actually enjoyed that part in the movie. I liked the
You
meta
enjoyed that
commentary
part?
on it. I did. I
Yeah.
did. It was one of the
Okay.
parts of the movie I enjoyed.
There
Overall,
was one.
I thought
Okay.
this them trying to figure out how would they go about recreating the magic, which is exactly the conversation that they were likely having behind the scenes in the
I'm really
studio
not sure if
making
there
this
wasn't a
movie.
character that said that was the best game ever made at some point. Like, is that not a character's line? Feels like that probably was.
They do make it seem like the Matrix games in this movie were, again, super groundbreaking, still talked about to this day. Like they show like Game Award, Tom Anderson, The Matrix 1999.
I watched the same movie. I know, Dave, you were saying that this, from your perspective, was the worst movie ever made. For me, this was, it was fine. From my perspective, I thought it was okay. First and foremost, it is extremely difficult to pull off a reboot. I would say that the vast majority of reboots are terrible. You can look at Transformers, Jaws, Terminator.
Is what I'm
Like
thinking.
Indiana Jones and the Crystal
Is this a
Skull, right?
reboot? No, this is just a sequel.
Oh, I think I see what he's saying. I think
Like the
you're talking more
fourth
about
movie. You go with a trilogy, and then the fourth movie is terrible, right? Like
and
Shia
not
LaBeouf
necessarily a
wasn't even
reboot.
in the fourth Transformers, right? Like in the fourth Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't even in it, right? The fourth movie of movies, after you go to the trilogy, the fourth one's.
Josh, I see what you're saying. Like, you make a trilogy, you button everything up, and then the studio's like, money, 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 make a fourth one. And it's like,
Exactly.
how do you
Sure.
continue a buttoned up trilogy or a
Those are
buttoned up series of
okay,
three?
but in what fucking universe was the Transformers trilogy a buttoned up trilogy?
Yeah, and it is cash grabby, right? Larry, that's exactly it. It's a cash grab move by the studio saying, listen, this trilogy, it's buttoned up, it's over. In The Matrix, they're dead, right? Trinity dies, a giant spike goes through her chest, and then Neo sacrifices himself in order to bring across the machine human peace. and it's over. That's a buttoned up trilogy. And Warner Brothers says, you know what? It's 20 years later. We need more money. We need another Matrix. And, you know, Lana Wachowski goes, okay, how are we going to do this if our main characters are dead? Right. And so I thought that this approach was actually really unique in terms of, you know, one, making it, you know, self-referential to the point where you can say, you know, this is you address the elephant in the room up front with the audience, right? The audience also doesn't know why this movie is needed. And you basically tell the audience up front, it isn't needed, but we're doing it anyway. So here we go. Buckle up.
What if you just did none of that, though? And you just made like an entertaining movie.
You know, that is
an alternative.
That is an option.
What if you didn't like apologize to the audience for making a bad movie and then just like made a good movie, is how I felt. Because like, I don't know. Like, I don't think I need an explanation as to why a movie got made. It's like someone wanted to make money or had an idea. The going on and on about, oh, The Matrix was so whatever, whatever. And then you're like, but what can we do to it's a movie about a simulation. You can make anything. You can make anything. They just they use scenes from the old movie. They could have made anything happen. It's a there scene where a magic exists.
You're right. And that's the approach that every other fourth movie has ever taken, was to just not address the elephant in the room as to like, why is this movie being made, and just moved forward and just made it. Whereas this movie decided to take a different tact. And I thought that that was unique. And I thought that it was creative of an approach to say, hey, you know, first and foremost, we're going to address this and then we're going to move on.
But like, not even though, because like in 21 Jump Street, there's only a scene where the people go, everyone's out of ideas, and they're just digging up tiled old trash and hoping no one will notice. And
but the thing is, they don't ever actually say why they're making the movie, because the entire plot of the movie seems to be to throw things that are in balance out of balance for seemingly no reason. Like, there's peace between the humans and the robots, right?
There was a civil war, right?
Amongst robots.
There's a robot civil war.
Which means that the robots who won that civil war are now not at peace with the humans because they're hunting Io.
Which is Zion by any other name? Is that like what we decided?
Well, Zion was the old one where they refused to have any interactions with the machines. Io is the new one where they do have the machines that lost in the civil war come to Io. And they're working together now.
That definitely happened. I just don't think it's groundbreaking to be like, mention that you're making a cash grabby movie. And Dave, do you have words you want to say?
No, I'm just kind of here.
Okay, good. Listen.
That could describe most of your life, Gonvasar.
Yeah. I mean, we start off, right? And I think we're from the point of view of Bugs and... Bugs.
Oh, is that
friend.
Her name?
Her name is Bugs. It's Bugs like okay. The bunny. Oh, yeah. His name is, Sequoia? That could be true.
I'm never going to reference
his name. Definitely could be Sequoia. Names. Someone look into that. Watching what appears to be the first scene of the first Matrix, right? But then the difference is that Morpheus is now Agent Smith in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Morpheus, who is a new Morpheus, and this is all inside a modal created by Keanu Reeves, right? Inside the Matrix he's in? Because he's in the Matrix. He's in a Matrix.
That confused me to no end. So they kept using this word modal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm dumb, but I'm also someone who's kind of in the video game industry, and I don't think I've ever heard this word used before.
So my understanding is it's like an AI thing where they let the AIs play a game against each other over and over and let them evolve.
So the Matrix game is real because it was coded? Because even though it was based on the actual Matrix, because Bugs and their crew are able to hack the modal that Neo / Tom Anderson creates while he's in the Matrix. So are we led to believe that anyone that can program who is in the Matrix can essentially create a world and create something that can be accessed?
Well, a couple of things. One, Keanu Reeves' character is a programmer. That's how we're introduced to him in Matrix 1. So
yeah.
he can program. No, the Matrix that Keanu Reeves is living in and the Matrix that he creates exists in the same reality. That all of that is within the Matrix. He's just created a modal within the Matrix. And so he's invented. And it's not just Morpheus. It's a Morpheus like Agent Smith merged. And it's basically he's trying to create an artificial intelligence that would have the ability to rescue him if he is living in the Matrix. Because he's not sure. Like, most of him thinks he's not living in the Matrix because the, what is it, the therapist is doing, the analyst
I think it's an
is
analyst.
Doing, yeah, the analyst is doing a really good job of, you know, keeping him thinking that he isn't in the Matrix and that the Matrix wasn't reality. The Matrix was just a video game that he created. So because he remembers it, what the analyst is doing is he's making it so, hey, you remember it because you built it as a video game trilogy. That's why you remember it. But if he,
right.
let's say, just sort of brought him back as a normal person, he'd have these memories and be like, but there would be no reason for him to have those memories. So he'd put more stock into it.
They can't erase his memories?
No, I don't
okay.
think he can.
Okay.
I don't think he has that power.
Okay.
The whole other level of like he's creating it and like the AI thing, I did not.
I think it makes more sense if you see, you know, the Morpheus Agent Smith crossover character, that whenever he's flesh, right, that means he's within a matrix. So for the
right,
the
right,
opening
right.
scene,
I understood that.
For when he comes into like the office, right, he's still flesh. But then when they go into the real world, now he's basically a bunch of, I don't know, steel balls.
Right. So the modal, though, is like a second level matrix, right? Is that?
That's what I was trying to confirm.
It's like an inception.
Yeah, it's like inception. Yeah, yeah that's okay. a good way of thinking of it.
Fantastic.
But yeah, they both are matrix.
It's like matrix, a thing yeah. within a thing.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that happens. And then Bugs pulls Morpheus out. They like go to his office, right? And his business partner, who is sort of like the corporate suit who's telling him about Warner Brothers making them make the movie or the Matrix sequel. They talk about it. Jonathan Groff is his business partner, who is also the new Agent Smith.
Correct.
Right. I don't know why there's an Agent Smith.
Well, he's not the new Agent Smith. He is the old Agent Smith from the original trilogy.
He's the old Agent Smith.
Yeah.
In this new Matrix.
Yes.
Why do they put Agent Smith in the new Matrix?
As somebody to make sure that Neo doesn't get out of line. That's his role in the last one, too.
Yeah, it feels like that went terribly for them, though, right? Like, they remember that one. They must remember it. They talk about it constantly. Agent Smith was, like, sort of the... Remember, they had a big, big thing. They couldn't defeat him. He took over the whole world, right? Wasn't that...
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing that... the analyst believes he can control Agent Smith, and so it's one of those, you know, flying a bit too close to the sun, maybe. But he brings him back in order to watch over Neo.
Keep yeah, they have on. A they have a conversation later on about like the duality between Neo and Agent Smith, and like something, something, something.
A lot of duality,
maybe something there.
I mean, because Neo had another handler. It was like his goofy assistant
yeah.
or whatever,
yeah,
who was also a handler, right? Like
supposedly.
Yeah, he didn't do yeah. a lot of handling, but...
I think he's just sort of like another agent, just like, as opposed
like a just
to...
Like just in
you
case?
Know, yeah, I just... Right. I mean, Agent Smith is like Agent Smith, whereas... Well,
right, I mean, this is barely Agent Smith, though, because yeah. like this doesn't really share any of the characterization at all.
He does the whole Mr. Anderson thing.
Right, but then he calls him Tom, which I think is, you know, different. I mean, he's supposed to be different, right? I just don't know why in the universe of this thing they would introduce another Agent Smith. It feels like that was the mistake they should have learned from. But either way, I guess we should sort of mention that the overall thrust of the movie is that Neo is in a matrix created by Neil Patrick Harris, which gives power based on the idea that if they can keep Trinity and Neo in close proximity, they generate a lot of power.
Closer you bring them together, the more energy it produces. And so good, keep them close together. But then if you make them touch, then the two of them become too powerful, at which point it breaks the whole thing. So how do you create a matrix where they're close but not too close?
You can just put them on opposite sides of the world.
Well, then... they have to be close but not too close. I mean, this was just said. I mean, it's stupid in the movie, but it was, like, in the universe of this podcast, like, he just said that.
So just within the movie, they have to be physically close to one another?
Yeah, their closeness in this matrix somehow generates power because of magic, I think.
I mean, it's like Monsters, Inc. level of, like, power generation logic.
It is, like, I think actually when we watched
the movie... You actually said that while
I think
watching.
I said this is Monsters,
Inc. I literally wrote that in my notes.
At some point. Neil Patrick Harris in this movie I thought was, like, kind of bad. And I usually like him.
I actually really liked him in this movie. I thought he did a good job.
Did you like him?
Yeah.
I found him to be, like, the worst.
I thought some of it was fine, but again, the movie, like... Like, he's saying dialogue and they're doing foreshadowing as if we don't know the tropes of the Matrix universe. Like, I felt like a lot of the movie, I don't know. Like, I don't know if a lot of the movie was supposed to be just callbacks to this world that the Matrix has made.
I can safely say a lot of it was supposed to be callbacks. They even say, who could resist a callback? I mean...
But, like, think back to the scene with the architect in the original trilogy, right?
Right. Another
and
bad
it's just
scene.
Like the bunch of televisions and the, you know, just monologue that, you know, but between where it just sort of drones and you don't really understand, just sort of talking at you. Neil Patrick Harris did a really good job of taking that characterization and just, like, making it into, you know, something with feelings and emotions. And he was angry at times and he was, you know, scared at times. And It was entertaining as opposed to just, oh, I'm going to sit in a chair in a blank room with a bunch of televisions and basically just exposition at you.
They improved upon one of the stupider scenes in their previous bad movies.
Yeah.
But you could just make a different thing.
Yeah, well, I feel like a lot of your points are just like, you could just do something different.
Right, well, you keep being like, you keep trying to, like, explain a lot of the things I don't like about this movie, which, like, is fair. You can like them. But your explanations seem to be like, oh, well, they improved upon this bad thing by making it a little bit different. And I'm just like, you don't have to do that same shit. You could just do whatever. You don't have to be like, we were closely hewing to this old thing, but we improved on it in some way. It's like, just do a different thing. Or don't do, like, do whatever hell you want. Like, but
you know what's, like, interesting is there's, like, a clever duality between, like, what we're talking about and what the movie actually did, where we were just talking about, like, the whole Neo Trinity thing where you bring them close together, that creates the energy, but you can't let them touch because that would ruin the whole thing. So if you make this fourth movie, right, you have to make it close to the rest of the trilogy, but you can't make it the rest of the trilogy, otherwise it ruins it and breaks the whole movie. So it's interesting.
They did that with the new Star Wars and A New Hope. It was basically the same thing. And people
I liked the seventh Star Wars. That was the best Star Wars. Exactly. Out of all Star Wars, that is the best Star Wars. I'm on record saying that. Number seven is the best Star Wars. All the other Star Wars are bad Star Wars. It's a good point, Dave. Second of all, no, you don't, though. Because, like, in the world of the Matrix, there's some magic rule that says Trinity and Neo create power when they're close together. In the world of where we live, which presumably is not the Matrix, you don't have to make a sequel be close to the original. You can just do other shit. You know? You can do all kinds of stuff. I mean, then fine, though. What's this rule-based model you're using? Like, I don't understand. You know, like, Bumblebee, another bad movie, which people like, though, is very, very unconnected from the other Transformers movies.
You realize that Bumblebee is an actual character in the actual Transformers universe, right? Like a pretty main one. So you saying that it's completely unconnected is preposterous because Bumblebee, the main character, is like a main character in the actual Transformers movies.
That's the length of the connection, though.
Bumblebee, the speechless character in both these movies, who is a character in, I think, name only. These are both all, I mean, the first Transformers I liked, and Bumblebee was awful. But yeah, so they had similar characters. I mean, you could put Neo back in this movie, or you could put Trinity. You could make this all about Trinity. You could make it the adventures of Trinity and her two kids or whatever, you know, and like do what you can do whatever the hell you want. Like, but like to pretend like we had to make it super close for some reason, like why? No, you didn't.
That's your main thing with this movie is all of the references and all the stuff of like, we made this movie and it seems like your main thesis is like, this movie just shouldn't have been made, period. And all of the evidence that the movie is even trying to meta explain of why it's made doesn't hold up for you.
No, I would say that's not right. I would say I don't like anything about this movie. I would say that what happens is I'm saying I don't like anything about this movie. Josh is sort of giving some reasons why those things are the way they are. And I'm saying that I feel those reasons don't hold up because they're sort of based on a framework of we had to do this thing. Whereas, like, I don't think you did. I think, like, the explanations for all these things I don't like don't hold water because you could just do a million other things. Like, I think they just made a bad movie. I don't think it's necessarily... I think they could hew to the original movie and make a good movie. I just don't think they did that. But, like, I don't think that as an explanation as to why they made the choices they did holds water for me. I just don't like the movie independent. Like, I don't really care if it's, like, super, you know, engrossed in the mythology of the original Matrixes. Like, that's fine, and I think that's a reasonable take. But I don't think that's an explanation for the things that I think are bad in this movie, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't know if that's any clearer. I mean, obviously this movie is like very meta, right? And it's very engrossed in its own mythology in ways that, like, if you hadn't seen the first, I mean, they tell you a lot of it, but like this movie would make a lot less sense if you hadn't seen the first three Matrixes, at least the first couple, right? Right.
I honestly think this movie is self-contained. I honestly think
you think this movie is self-contained.
Yeah, I think you could find somebody who's never seen the Matrix before. You could show them this movie, and they could understand and follow along to this movie.
I think you'd have to at least have seen the first Matrix.
No, I really don't think you would have. I really don't think so.
You don't think so?
What about this movie wouldn't have been understood without having...
I think it's probably the constant references to all those movies.
Right, but the fact that they're referencing those other movies means that you're now seeing it on the screen, which means you are now following along.
But sometimes they'll just say a line and be like, I couldn't resist the callback. And you're like, that makes no sense to me.
So you get that there is a callback, but like you don't have to...
Right, but like being like, oh my god, it's a reference. This isn't like a good movie experience.
I disagree because I think you're kind of taking it on both sides, right? You're saying, like, I didn't enjoy this movie because I've seen the other movies and because it was so self-referential and I'd already seen those movies. That's why I didn't it.
Okay.
But then you're also saying that if you're a person who hasn't seen the movies before, you wouldn't like this movie because, you know, of all the things that you hadn't seen before and you would have needed to see those things in order to understand this movie. So I just don't think you can have your cake and eat it.
Sorry. Allow me to just have my cake for just a brief moment, though. Let me explain why I didn't like this movie, because I feel like this keeps getting muddled somehow, and I thought I was being very clear. I think this movie is painfully boring. I think the story, when it's not nonsensical, is very boring. I think the characters have very little to them. I think there's new characters that are introduced that don't offer much of anything. Since I don't have a deep love for the characters of Neo and Trinity, just seeing them on screen doesn't do a ton for me. So... when they're there, I'm just like, whatever. I've never bought their like love in the first ones, and I feel like this movie doesn't do enough to build it up that I would care independently of that. I think the fight scenes in this are not very good. I think this references the old movies, but then doesn't elevate in a lot of ways. It only does stuff worse. So I don't feel like I'm building on cool stuff. I feel like the best moments of this, like I feel like whenever I see a moment I enjoy, I'd rather watch the other ones. I feel like there's a lot of plot elements that sort of seem to be set up, but then not paid off. I just don't understand the choices made for the story in a lot of places. Like, there's not a specific element to this movie that I think is bad. It's just, I think every single thing about this movie is poorly done. I don't know, particularly.
Whatever it's worth, I did think it was very strange that, like, why bother having some new characters and some old characters be the same character, or like actors be the same? Like, I found that to be very weird.
I think they just couldn't get some. I think they couldn't get Lawrence Fishburne or Hugo Weaving. And I mean, within the universe of the Matrix, you can update people's appearance. That's fine, I guess. But it's just like
he looked the same outside the Matrix, or he looked different outside the Matrix.
Yeah, that's because of like the DSI, right? They have a digital self-image. That's how Neo was hidden, right? Because he looked different to other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, did you think the fight choreography was good? Because
No, it's surprising to me that the guy from John Wick is in this, because I really like the choreography from John Wick. I also thought that the fight choreography in this was extremely lackluster. I thought it was lazy to just make, Keanu Reeves goes, oh, I know Kung Fu. And it's like, okay. But then he basically refuses to use any of it for most of the movie and instead goes with this like weird force push for like most of it.
Yeah, he does
so, not all of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's some in that, like, with the Exiles, he does, like, a little bit, but it's mostly just push, push, push. And I don't know, I just thought that that was lazy. I thought that the fight choreography with everybody else was really stupid. I didn't like the fight scenes at all.
Right.
That's one thing I didn't like. And the other thing I really didn't like was how there was no stakes in terms of, at the end of the movie, everyone lives, which is crazy. I mean, in the original Matrix, like, the crew of the Nebuchadnezzar is, like, decimated. Just decimated. They all die.
Like, half of them die very quick, like right when Joey Pants betrays them. Like, what, 3 or 4 people die, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's, like, one of the parts of the movie where you're like, okay, there are some stakes in this movie. Like, some of these people aren't going to make it. I need to pay attention. And then they had that, like, suicide mission, right? And in Io, and she goes, like, well, I can't, you know, some of you need to step forward. Like, oh, my God, they all step forward. It's like, well, this is a suicide mission. And they, like, everyone makes it. So, like, I don't know about this being, like, a suicide mission because, you know, show me someone dying. Yeah, just one.
To be clear, the mission's just to free Trinity, right?
Yeah.
Is that what this whole mission is? Right.
Right, but Trinity's, like, in the machine base. Like, it's a crazy impossible mission that they were able to pull off just the once to get, you know, Neo, but then they have to, like, do it all over again.
They pull it off twice crazy, in this movie.
Yeah, like, and then they pull it off twice and no one dies. And it's like, come on. Come on.
I mean, they were aided by Confederate robots, so...
Right. And it's not like any of these characters have, like, true, like, oh, I need plot armor, like, I really need to make it to the end of this movie. Like, most of them could have died, and the plot would have been fine.
Because they were all nameless, but, I mean, they got on the ship, and they're like, I'm Bugs, and I'm Bugs' friends, and we all have names, but, like, we're never addressed by them. And they're like,
100% true.
One guy introduces himself. He's like, I'm a neologist. So, like,
yeah.
I have so many questions. And I'm like, oh, you're the new worst character in this movie. Fantastic.
Right.
Like, that is the dumbest thing I've heard since the Men in Black robot that popped up 5 seconds ago or whatever. Like,
which was also really silly. The little robots were ridiculous.
The manatee robot.
Yeah. I thought that was silly. Yeah, that actually reminded me a lot of, Avatar, the cartoon where it had, like, you know, what is it, Momo
Appa,
and Appa?
Appa yeah. Yeah,
that's what it reminded me of, and it was just like, oh, well, okay. But, you know, fortunately, it didn't last too long.
Sort of like the movie Bumblebee, where they show you a machine, for both times, too, it's a machine civil war, and they show you, like, a, you know, minute clip of that, and at some point, you're like, why aren't I watching that movie? Like,
yes. That
seems like the more interesting movie of, like, the machine civil war. But instead I watched this movie of go to rescue Trinity. And, like, so I guess it's important. Do you guys care about the character of Trinity at all? Like, is that
I don't care about any of the characters, to be honest.
Right, neither. But I think the movie doesn't expect you to care about many of the characters. But you're at least supposed to care about Morpheus, Trinity, and Neo. That seems to be the thing they expect you to care about.
I mean, Neo and Trinity you're definitely supposed to care about, and I guess in terms of all of the characters in this movie, I guess they would be my... I don't know. I don't know. It's tough for me to say.
I don't know. The character of Neo has always sort of bored me. Like, I thought it was always fine as, like, a fish out of water, you know, learning about the world in the first one. In the second one, he was sort of just Superman running around doing wild stuff. But him being in love with Trinity, I guess, never hit for me. Like, is that a relationship that means anything to you guys? Like,
Not really.
We had watched the other movies leading up, and it feels like you're supposed to think these people are deeply in love, and that's supposed to make sense.
So when I first watched The Matrix way back in the day, my favorite character by far was Morpheus. It's just no question, hands down. Loved Morpheus. Loved every moment he was on screen. And then after that, I'd say Agent Smith. I thought he was phenomenal. I loved seeing him on screen. All of his scenes are excellent. after that, I don't know. Like, I like a lot of the side characters. Like, I like Mouse a lot. But for me, like, Neo, yeah, it's kind of like what you're saying, just sort of the fish out of water character. He's kind of bland. He's kind of boring as himself. He kind of plays the straight man in the movie, you know, where everything else is like chaotically happening around him. And then, yeah, I mean, Carrie Ann Moss is someone who I absolutely had a crush on when I was like, you know, 10 or whatever this movie came out. She was this like, you know, badass, you know, character. But yeah, I don't know. I've really bought into the whole love story between her and Neo because it's just, I didn't see the chemistry there. They even try to do this like weird sex scene, I think, in the second movie. Yeah, I mean, they make it the crux of why this new Matrix exists. And, you know, for me, it just sort of drives the plot along in terms of, well, why are Neo going back into the Matrix? Oh, it's to pull out Trinity. And it's, you know, I think it's fair, even if the love story wasn't there, it would be, well, Trinity pulled Neo out first. And so it would be only right. And she risked her life to do that. It would be only right for him to do the same for her.
Right, but she pulled him out in the first movie.
Right.
In order to save the world.
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, it seems like he's willing to give up the survivors of Zion in order to pull her out just because he loves her so much.
I think that's fair.
It seems almost reversed. Like, there was like a utilitarianism to pulling Neo out of the Matrix in the first one because he was necessary for something. In this one, he's just like, I really fucking love Trinity. And you're like, oh, okay, but like, this, we have other women over here. I mean, some of them are in really terrible makeup and stuff, but like, you know, there's some younger ones. And he's like, no, I gotta go find, I saw her in the vat, and I'm going back. Some of you are gonna have to sacrifice your lives in the suicide mission. I mean,
apparently not though.
Not in reality. But who the hell knew? And they're like, okay.
Yeah, it's, I think, like, it makes it sort of more of an emotional investment though, because like, it wasn't necessary, right? Like, so if Trinity was necessary in order to save Io, then it's kind of like, well, Neo's going back to get Trinity, but, you know, he probably should anyway, because, you know, it's the right thing to do for everybody. Whereas, you know, if you put Trinity on a scale, you need all of the good things to be on the other side of the scale, because if all the good things are on her side of the scale anyway, then there's no choice there, right? It's just, well, I guess I was going to do that anyway, so I guess
That's absolutely true. But what I'm saying is that then you as a movie have to sell me on like, oh, this is why this guy loves her.
But I think it's a valid critique. I just think it's a valid critique of the original trilogy as opposed to a valid critique of this movie. Because if they didn't establish that over three movies back in the original trilogy, then you were never going to get that here.
They're on screen and they have an opportunity to develop chemistry. They're sitting in a diner and it's just like, this is painful to watch. Like,
yeah, it was super awkward.
Like, it's an awkward person. I'm just like,
especially the husband comes in with her two kids, and that whole thing is like kind of bizarre.
And the guy, like,
they're sitting at Simulate coffee shop or whatever.
Yeah, but that's the best part of the movie. It's called Simulate.
Because of references. We love puns.
When they're in the coffee shop, his handler, who we later find out is sort of an agent of the analyst, calls Trinity over to him and tries to, like, you know, get them involved.
Yeah.
Which seems like, I don't know, very much flying close to the sun when they're like, we need them close, but what if we had them at the same table and they could have conversed amongst themselves? Like, I don't know.
I didn't even put that together.
That was one of those things that makes less sense in hindsight.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it seems like the evil guy actively got them together at some point and stoked the fires of their relationship when it seemed like he was sort of just, you know, pining for her from afar in a weird, creepy way.
That was a mistake.
you know.
That's a really good point I never thought of.
But then, like, there's another question I have is sort of, like, the amount of control they have over the Matrix, which seems kind of batshit, because why do they need, like, a handler program? Like, why can't they not just see people?
Do they try to explain that in the first trilogy and just never at least in the first movie?
I don't know,
never address it?
I honestly don't know. I mean, in the first movie, Agent Smith comes into the office, right? And they clearly don't know where Neo is because he's able to elude them. Right?
Right.
And then they install a tracking worm thing in his body. So obviously they need to install that program within the context of the Matrix So it seems like once people upload into the Matrix, they sort of can't be altered by the Matrix.
You need to do it internally rather than just do it externally. Yeah,
like you need to do it within the world of the Matrix, is how it seems.
Right, which does seem strange. I mean, the logic is
right. Like, you're allowed to make your own logic. It just seems. So we find out later that the analyst, right, can stop time with something called bullet time.
Right? Which totally broke my fucking brain in not a good way. It's not like the world slowed down. It was a film. It's a film technique used to show Neo's power, but then he's using it as like an actual superpower.
Yeah. So it seems like within the world of this new Matrix, they've sort of given themselves the ability to just slow down time, so they can't be thought by other people. That's just like an upgrade, I guess they made. Is that all?
But only for NPH kind of doing his evil speech and revealing, oh, I'm actually the bad guy the whole time, even though if you paid any sort of attention, you already knew that. Because they don't really do that at any other point, right?
Well, they do it at the end in the cafe, right? And then Agent Smith doesn't need to abide by it, so just like kills him. What's Agent Smith's motive in this one?
I had that question too.
Because he's not a character in any real sense, right? He tries to kill Neo at the beginning.
Well, and then he says he has something about like wanting to find Neil Patrick Harris, or like he wants Neil Patrick Harris, so he's like not being controlled, quote unquote, anymore.
Well, it's the same motivation he had in the past, right? He wants to be free. And so the analysts now put him back in and back under his thumb and can control him because he can do the bullet time thing, whereas, you know, Agent Smith can't. And so the first thing Agent Smith wants to do is kill Neo, because
bullet time doesn't work on Agent Smith.
Everyone else was slow. He walked up to him behind the bar.
I don't know how he's controlling him then, if not through the bullet time, but for some reason he is being controlled. And so the first thing he wants to do is kill Neo, because that just blows up the whole thing, and at least he can be free in death. But then the second thing he wants to do is team up with Neo. Right. Well, eventually, you know, they end up working together by accident, because, you know, Agent Smith ends up saving him.
And it seems like if you removed him from the movie, it wouldn't have changed anything.
Well, they wouldn't have made it out. Right.
I mean, I guess, but that's sort of like they created this problem of bullet time and then they solved it with Agent Smith. And it's like you could have removed both those things and nothing would have changed.
Yeah, but I think the ability of the analyst to have bullet time makes it just that much more difficult and like impossible to defeat him within the Matrix itself.
Sure, but like you sort of find out about bullet time, and then the next time bullet time shows up, it's solved not by the characters in any way. It's solved by Agent Smith. There's not even like it seems like they plan to have him show up, right? It seems like he just showed up and saved them.
Right.
So it's sort of like they introduce this thing, and then the only payoff is sort of subverted by this guy just showing up, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of this movie I feel like I must have missed, because otherwise it feels like it doesn't make sense.
So there was a lot of this movie I missed on first viewing, because I fell asleep for the middle 40 minutes of this movie.
Yeah,
probably. Which I think also says a lot and is very revealing.
But I mean, that's...
So then I went back and did rewatch it, though.
Okay, well, you should did rewatch it. Okay.
I think that is very revealing of this movie.
Yeah, my issue with this movie was it was fucking boring. It was so long and so boring at the same time. And like
one scene that I wanted to happen, when everyone starts to turn at the end, and Trinity's kids are in there, and we thought the Trinity's kids were going to start attacking people, and they were going to beat them, but it didn't happen.
The husband is a bot, but the kids are real?
Yeah, so how did that work? Did the bot husband impregnate her?
No. I'm sure that they just came into the Matrix, and that was already established in the world. Like, these two children are now, like, they're already there. Yeah.
Like she woke up one morning and she had kids?
Right.
Okay.
You can write those memories in, but you can't take out other memories and program
them? Presumably, yeah, yes.
I guess. I mean, that... Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Wait, because, I mean, I guess the whole point is they wrote in the memories of him making all these video games, right?
Right.
That's
true. That's also interesting in terms of the question of control. It's like, so you have all this control over memories, but you can't just, like, GPS Neo, or you can't, like, control them in other ways.
It seems like they have a lot of control when they create the people, but then don't have control over them after they've released into this sort of sandboxy world. One thing we haven't talked about is there were new characters, right? We mentioned
a lot of new characters.
But there was Bugs, who is sort of our protagonist, shit. Right? Like, for some of it.
So.
What do you mean for some of it?
She kind of disappears halfway.
Well, I mean, Neo's kind of the protagonist for some of it, right?
Oh, you're just saying, like, the main character focus. As opposed to, like, on the good side. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Her character is there the whole time. What is her character, like, there for, I guess? Like, what is this character?
Well, the character, she's a lieutenant? She's a lieutenant in the army?
Captain?
Is a captain?
I think she's the captain of her own ship.
She's the captain of her own ship. She's under the general in Io. And then hears rumors that Neo is still in the Matrix, and so she goes looking.
Right,
and then
she
finds him.
She had seen him jump off the building.
Mm-hmm. So in that
form,
right, in that moment, she had seen him for his true self, and then went back to go get him.
Right. So this is so. I thought they were trying to set up that she was the daughter. Did you guys get that sense or no?
Whose daughter?
Like Neo and Trinity's daughter.
Oh. No, when did that happen?
Yeah, I did not guess that.
So I got that sense when, first of all, I didn't know why she was in the movie. Second of all, at some point they were like, she has to be the one to bridge the gap. DNA is the closest or something. First of all, why is this bridging the gap thing a thing? And second of all, why is her DNA the closest if it is a thing? Like, that seemed like the whole conceit of bridging the gap was only put there so we could figure out that her DNA was the closest.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that at all. Maybe that is why that was. I honestly didn't understand why there would need to be the mind gap. I didn't understand why her DNA was the closest for the mind gap. None of that came through. But if that's their daughter, then that's
but I don't think it is, because like then
Easter egg.
Then the movie just ends sort of like, it seemed like they were setting that up and then just sort of didn't do it, which I think just as well. But then this character seemed to be nothing else. She, again, just seemed like a Neo fanboy. I don't know, pulled him out, but then, like, it seemed like the movie didn't care that much about her a lot of the time. Like, she seemed like she should have been more important than she was. We were actually talking about Jenny Nicholson before it started. And Jenny Nicholson did a video on what was a... So this is like a Star Wars, basically... A Star Wars writer wrote his version of Episode 9. In his version of Episode 9 ends with Luke Skywalker coming back and fighting Snoke. Or what, actually, a bunch of clone Snokes, or just armies of Snokes, basically. And her commentary was just like, okay, so this new movie ends with, you know, the hero from the old movie fighting some random villain that we just found, and all the new characters we introduced to are just also there. And, like, that's how the end of this movie felt to me, right? Like, Neo was back, and also Trinity was there, being their Force dyad. They fight the analyst and this new character that, I don't know, is certainly a character. And the new characters you introduced to, who, like, you sort of imagine are, like, the successors to this legacy, the vessel to get us back to this Neo and Trinity thing that, like, I don't know. We had 3 movies of that, and it was only good for one of them. So, like, why are we back? Like, that's the thing. It seems like this movie, like, conspicuously and, like, very consciously, like, never wanted to deviate from these old people. They could have just made the new characters way more important. You know, like, Neo could have had his place in the story or whatever, but then these new characters could have been, like, more essential to the solution. Yeah, you could have used him as, like, a tool to do something or, like, whatever. But the movie was about him and Trinity. Like, at the end of the movie, they're the ones who come back and are like, they do the Ready Player One ending, sort of like, oh, this is our...
Right. Oh, the Oasis?
The Oasis, yeah. So that's what they come to tell the analyst, like, this is our Oasis now. And he's like, oh, what about that character Bugs? Is she your daughter? And he's like, fuck that noise. Like,
I know. At the end of the previous ones, Neo did that, but now Trinity did that instead? Was that supposed to symbolize something that I just did not pick up on?
Yeah, so... I don't know why he couldn't fly now that he has force powers, but then luckily she can fly. Also, the way she flies is it looks like there's a fucking balloon strapped to her ass and she sort of drifts into the air. He flies like he's Superman jumping. I have no idea what the effects were in this. I don't know why that's her sort of flight mechanism.
They made it seem like this is obviously a big moment. This is like a finale moment. And I don't know if because I'm not as well-versed in the Matrix universe or only mostly remember the first one and not numbers 2 and 3.
I don't know. I don't know why Trinity is able to fly and Neo isn't able to fly. It's possible that, you know, Trinity is now able to see the Matrix more clearly than Neo is. I think that's why he was able to fly at the end of the first movie, is he's now able to see the code, quote-unquote, right, or whatnot.
And I think, but they do show her seeing the code at some point, right?
Yeah, so I think she might have, like, broken to that next level faster than he did. What I would have preferred as that last scene, I thought it was great. They jump off the building and then, you know, presumably to their own deaths. And it was, for me, it was a bit of a callback to, this comedy. Yeah, the other guys. Oh my God. Just like aim for the.
Which we also referenced while we were watching the movie.
Yeah, I mean.
There goes our heroes. Right. But yeah, no, what I would have preferred is if they had let that happen longer. Let them fall. Let them fall all the way to the ground, because that calls back to a couple of things. You know, Trinity jumps out the window and her trust, and then she's like shooting up. That's an iconic scene. There's a lot of times where they like jump out of windows and you think like this is the end, and they easily could have jumped out the window at the very, or off the roof at the end of the movie, and you could think, okay, this is going to be the end of Neo and Trinity, at which point, you know, it
says so
to Bugs and the rest of the characters, God, like, listen, you don't need a Neo. You don't need a savior. You don't need someone to, like, you can do this on your own. And I would have been happy with two endings. One, they both straight up die. That would have been great. You could move on with the new characters. Exactly, Dave, to your point, like, listen, let's forget about the old characters.
But this is the very end of the movie.
This is the very end of the movie. Yeah. So that's ending number one I would have been great with. Ending number two,
pass the torch.
Ending number two would have been like, I don't know, a couple inches off the ground, open their eyes, and it turns out, wait, why haven't we hit the ground? And it turns out like, oh, Neo, you saved us. Oh, no, wait, no, I'm not doing anything. And then it's like, oh, shit, it's Trinity. And so that would have been an interesting, but for them to start flying 3 feet off the roof, it just took away all of the, you know, suspense as to whether or not they'd make it.
I actually have a different one that I think might work, and it's similar to yours, I think. I don't know if you guys probably remember the first Matrix when Neo jumps off the roof for the first time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, so I remember, maybe someone can look this up. My remembering of that is he hits the ground, but it's rubber, basically.
Oh, and then he gets launched back up in the air.
Right, because they control, like, that's a program they control. Right, that's their training ground.
Yeah.
So if they both jumped off, hit the ground, but it turns out it's soft or whatever, you know, even if it's Trinity, then has the ability to control the world in that way. And rather than her flying like he did too, it could be like she's sort of controlling it a different way. And then like when it's sort of like more reality bending.
Yeah, that would have been cool too.
Whatever. And I think
like rewriting the world, aka rewrite, like tapping into the code and rewriting the environment. That'd be interesting.
Like when Thanos has the reality stone, he does some of that. And yeah, like you said, it's just like they jump off and then they're sort of just floating there. And it's like, oh, okay, I guess they can do that now. I get like, it's sort of weird that, I mean, the force push thing is so weird because like Keanu Reeves has recently made action movies. You know, it's not like Keanu Reeves can't do action stuff at his age, like which you'd understand if he couldn't, but it seems like he can.
There was a thing that came out of like him trying to slow down a little bit about that because of just him getting older. But at the same time, like if all of the pieces were there for like he's ready to do it. John Wick choreographer, who's also part of the first Matrix trilogy, like all the pieces are there for him to do choreography. Why not do that because it was so cool and we've seen it and we want it? And then just like rely on fucking force push. I don't know.
I think a thing that I would have preferred as part of the fight choreography, and at least to explain it, if he truly didn't want to, you know, be a part of that, and or it slowed down or whatever this is totally delete the part of the movie with Morpheus and him in the dojo. Just take all of that out, and then you have him going back into the Matrix without that training scene. And so he doesn't know Kung Fu, right? And so that's why he wouldn't be able to do those fight scenes. So when they're in the Matrix, they have to protect him, whereas it used to be like he would protect them. And then slowly but surely he can like start to remember a power. He gets like really, really angry or something, and then he can force push, and that's like his only thing is he can do that because it's the only thing he knows how to do at this point. Like that would be a solid way that you could, you know, make that happen. I just didn't like that they showed him learning Kung Fu and then he like didn't apply it.
I agree with you. And I also like don't think it's bad if his powers like evolve, because they did throughout the movies, like the first
right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it would make sense for at some point him just be so powerful it's telekinesis, right? But that doesn't seem to be what's going on. You know?
Yeah, it would have been cool if he learned that towards the end of the movie where he needs it on the motorcycle. And it's just like, he's like fighting them off and then all of a sudden he pushes it's like, okay, now I can do this. And that would be helpful in that scenario. But it's not terribly necessary for like the fight with the Exiles at that point.
Yeah, the fight with the Exiles is just so nothing too. Like,
there was also more meta commentary in that, just to have it, I guess.
What was that?
So the main exile guy, who I just called main homeless guy because I didn't know, I totally forgot what they were.
Yeah, it's basically totally what he was.
Totally forgot what they were. But as they're fighting and he's doing his like rambling, mm-hmm. he's commenting on like new media and stuff like that being like so bleh. Which I thought was like, how are you still doing this?
I wasn't able, if I heard his words, I certainly didn't understand them.
Really couldn't tell if he was speaking French or not.
I think he was speaking French. I think the first thing the exile does too is catch a bullet with his teeth. And then they just sort of have like a shitty fight
scene. Yeah.
Like Star Wars had 3 movies, right? And then did a reboot for the 7th one. And they had old characters and they had new characters. And they sort of metered out a lot of the old characters in the first movie. And they, like, the new characters were important. Like, you can't do the story of Star Wars, you know, even 7, we'll say, without Rey and Finn and Poe. So,
yeah.
This one is, like, this movie's about Neo and Trinity. But, it like, we start off with the other characters, and we're supposed to, like, I just feel like we don't get enough time with them. And it seems like they could have been interesting. Like, if you want to, there's not a lot left if you're not willing to expand the universe. And, like, it feels like this had no interest. And, like, I understand they, like, make meta commentary on it, but I just feel like that doesn't get you enough of the way there. Like, I don't know. I just want to know what the fuck Bugs was doing. Like, tell me more about Bugs. This new character who's like a real actress, you know, and she has a whole crew and she's a captain like Morpheus. It could have been interesting, but it wasn't delivered. We spent just as much time with like fucking Niobe wearing terrible makeup. Like
she looked like Uncle Drew from the commercial.
Because they decided to age her up 60 years for whatever reason. I guess they needed to like have enough time pass for a machine civil war and to establish this new city. Which the city seemed to have 3 people in it. It didn't seem like a very big city. The old Zion seemed
botanist.
Like, yeah,
and like 8 other people.
Old Zion had a whole rave and orgy scene. Like, yeah, at least have some of those random background guys die. Like, I don't know. And usually in movies, people are introduced, and you're like, okay, we have 3 main characters and 4th guy, and you're like, okay, so this guy's gonna die to raise the stakes. You know what I mean? Like, they could have had him wear
wearing a red shirt.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Like, they could have done that. Like. And we would have been like, fine, we get
it. I feel
like
one of the captains was wearing a red shirt.
Was he? Of course he was. But he didn't die, so subversion. Like, I don't know. At some point, I think if you're making a movie, at some point you have to make a movie. And you could also do as much commentary on, like, filmmaking as you want or whatever. But, like, you're still going to make a movie. And I just feel like they failed to deliver on that, like, basic thing. Is, like, I don't know, like, the comment, like, you can sit in the beginning and be like, oh, the commentary was, like, so accurate or whatever, but, like, you don't need to read, like, a Rolling Stones article about the legacy of the Matrix. Like, that can't be your Matrix movie. Like, you have to actually then make the movie. And I just feel like they didn't. Like, I don't know. I just don't know anything. Like, I didn't know Sequoia's name, or, like, I don't know, the neologist whose name is Berg, and there's someone named Lexi who idolizes Trinity, because of course she does. One likes Dio, one likes... They're all meant to be audience archetypes or whatever, but it's just like, that... I don't know. That like make the movie then. Make a movie. You got.
So you would have rather, and I partially agree with this too, because I think if you're going to extend a universe, this is kind of a way to do it. These new characters should have had their time in the sun, and it should have been more of like a pass the torch, like the Matrix, the Next Generation.
I would have loved for her to go into the Matrix or go to like try to rescue Neo and find out he's dead or he did sacrifice himself. Let Neo exist in the Matrix, but not be in the real world and have him just be like a false idol or whatever.
Oh, that would have been interesting. I'm already like, more interested in that.
Make freeing Neo like the bait of a trap. Like, so rather than, you know, whatever else they did for like the old defense mechanism, have the machines be like, okay, Neo is now the trap. And whenever there's, you know, Zion people, like rebels, the rebels, right? you know, because be like, okay, they're going to go for Neo thinking he's the super weapon and that's how we'll get him. And it feels like they have, like they had enough money and they have old actors who are willing to return. They have new actors. They have whatever, like they have options. So it's like, you could have done anything. So when I see this is what you choose to do, not that I'm judging you based on that, but just I'm judging you straight up on this is what you did. Like, you know, like
the constraints. You made choices.
I don't buy the constraints in that way. I really thought Bugs was meant to be the daughter. And I didn't know why, and I don't think that would have made it better, but it just seemed like they were going for that. I think Brayden mentioned this. There was a scene where they're on the train and they go through the bathroom mirror. And they have the thing where like, oh, you know, it gets bigger as you get closer or whatever. And it seemed like they could have done that same thing with the car mirrors. And, you know, they say objects closer than you appear. And I think that's exactly like that's what Brayden was saying when we were watching it. Yep. It's like it seems like there were some setups that never got paid off. And it seems like they were
right.
My old meant to be. Javelin.
I am already more interested in the whole we're sticking with Bugs's point of view and not switching. And Neo is in the Matrix, but he's actually like not, he doesn't actually exist in the real world anymore. He's like really dead or something. And it is just like red herring MacGuffin kind of thing. I'm already more interested in that plot line. Through Bugs' transformation.
I mean, Troger, like, so, I mean, you're the one who is like highest on this movie. You thought it was pretty good, right? Out of 10, what do you rate this?
I thought like a 5, just like a range between 4 and 6. Like I would never give it anything more than a 6. I wouldn't rate it lower than a 4. No, I thought it was a fine movie. It was okay. It was right down the middle. You guys said it was I remember it was the worst movie ever made. So I think any sort of ranking, even a 3, would have sounded like, you know, infinitely better than what.
So rewatching the old ones, I definitely had a lower opinion of them now than I did. You guys rewatch the old ones before this?
No, I didn't.
And my sense was the first one was like pretty good, but like longer than I remembered. And the longness kind of showed, like it had some sort of tedious parts that you were like, this is probably a good 90-minute movie, but it's actually 2.5 hours. And then the second one I thought was just kind of not that good. I feel like I remember it more fondly because I thought the action was cooler back at the time. But then rewatching it, it was just, you know, it's tough because obviously it's been 20 years, right? So, but like my like relationship with the Matrix is like I thought it was super cool when I was in middle school or whatever, and I continued to think that until I rewatched them, and then I sort of thought they weren't that great. But I would say I thought it was cool, but it wasn't like a foundational part of my person, you know.
I don't know. For me, for movies have to do one of two things: they have to be very thought provoking, or they need to be very cool and interesting. Like I didn't see John Wick, and I probably should. I know that you're not the biggest fan, but from what a lot of people say is like, there's not much of a plot so much as it's just really cool action and people enjoy watching it. And the thing is, for me, this movie didn't feel that thought provoking. The plot didn't matter. I didn't care about the characters and the action didn't make up for the lack of me caring about stuff in the movie. It wasn't like there was some really cool fight scenes. It wasn't like there was some cool special effects or, you know, at the very least, I guess you have CGI robots in Bumblebee, but like this just didn't have any of that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's fair comparison. John Wick, I would put John Wick as like, I don't know, like a 9 or a 10. Like that's
like
that,
three,
that redefined maybe the action genre. That's an excellent film.
One of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Dave hates it, but I guess the point that I'm making is I'm looking to be entertained in some way, and this just did not do that. Like, that's why I sit down and watch a movie, because I want to be entertained. And it's just,
if someone told me they liked John Wick, I could understand why they did. If someone told me they liked this movie, I'd be like doubly confused, I guess. You know, did you like the characters? I can't imagine that. Did you like the action? I can't imagine that. Did you like the incredibly long runtime? Like, this one is one where, like, I wouldn't, John Wick is one where I'd be like, okay, like, you know, there's like something there for somebody, even if it's not me. This one, I'm trying to imagine what your relationship with The Matrix would have to be, what type of movie you like this movie, to rate it super highly. And I can't think of that person.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the first Matrix, don't get me wrong. Right. I mean, as a kid when I watched that was my favorite movie for a very long time. I actually incorporated it into usernames and whatnot. I love the Matrix. But, you know, this movie, you know, it doesn't really, you know, it's fine. It's okay, but it's for me, it's not, you know, as anywhere close to the original Matrix, but it's certainly not the worst movie ever made. There's redeeming qualities.
What are they?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned that there was, you know, a couple of the characters I liked. NPH's character, I thought he did a solid job. I liked Agent Smith.
What was
Smith.
His character? What was his?
He was the analyst.
No, I know what the
he
names
built the
are.
Matrix.
Right, but like, but why though?
So
like,
that he
was
feed
he was
the
like
machine.
A why was he a misogynistic machine?
Misogynistic?
Yeah, he was like weirdly misogynistic in this movie.
Why?
I don't. That's my question to you.
No. I was asking, like, you know, in what way? I guess.
I don't know. I remember showing a couple of scenes, but I think at some point to Neo or something, he's like, "Oh my God, this! Can you get your
woman at the end? Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah. Put her on a leash or something. I think that was just an excuse to allow Trinity to continue hitting him. To be perfectly honest,
but like, yeah, it was just like
that's kind of like, have you ever seen James Bond, the latest one? And out of literally nowhere, I'll just give you a little brief spoiler at
the
end.
The racist guy?
No, this guy is just like the whole movie, just this like reasonable guy. And then at the very, very end, he just like turns to the black woman and he says something incredibly racist. And then she murders him, you know, right, which makes sense. But like, I think it was just a reason to allow her to murder him.
Yeah,
I think it's so similar here.
I think in this one, he does it like a couple times where he sort of has like a, you know, something, you know, control your woman or this, what, and he's sort of like objectifying her. And I'm sure this is like the point of something.
Yeah, he's also the villain, so like you can kind of just.
No,
like,
it's fine that he's a bad guy. It's just weird that he's bad in that way.
He's an omnipotent robot computer programmer.
Well, you could make a commentary on like how robots have the bias of, you know, the people who create them.
I just
like,
don't know that robots have like a masculine-centered society. It's their robots.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But you could. I mean, there's certainly like commentaries about how computers have the biases of people and make them, and they would permeate throughout the machines.
Oh, that's fair. That's an interesting point.
Right, and had this movie made that point, it would have been interesting. But that's not what the movie was saying. Like, the movie didn't like discuss that. The movie just like had to make like get your bitch on a leash, and you're just like, why? What? Like, why is his like, I don't know, weird control program like sort of like all of a sudden just like sort of a straw man misogynist? Like, I mean, other than him, like the other new characters were sort of, you know, did you like the new Morpheus or the new Smith? I guess.
Yeah, anyways, I enjoyed his character as well. Yeah.
Which one? Morpheus?
Yeah, the new Morpheus, yeah. I thought he was fine.
Yeah. The new
Morpheus was whatever. I mean, I can't say I like understood a lot of like the Agent Smith character, but I think Jonathan Groff did a very good job.
Yeah.
And I think they were smart to go in a different direction, right? I think if they had him imitate Hugo Weaving, it would have been awful. The girl Sati, who's an exile program, who is in one of the old movies, she was like the young girl, I guess. She's in it.
And she's at the train station.
Like, Niobe is here, and it's like, I don't know. It's like, any of these characters, I didn't connect with them at all. Like, the crew on the ships, like, they weren't characters, right? They wasn't a thing. Christina Ricci's in this movie for 30 seconds for some reason.
Was that actually her?
Yeah, she was like the business executive who just like did a bunch of buzzwords. Yeah.
I thought that was her, and then the scene ended, and I was like, what the fuck just happened?
And, like, I love Christina Ricci. I'm just like, it seems like we got a bunch of actors. Like, Jonathan Groff, so I love Glee, and Jonathan Groff's great in that. And from what I know,
he also did Hamilton, which was fantastic. He was the king.
He's great in Hamilton. He's good. He's great in Mindhunter.
Oh, Mindhunter.
He's in Mindhunter.
So like, yeah, he's in.
He's got chops,
and he's very good. And I think he's fine in this. I just like his character was just like.
Well, I think he played a good he's in Frozen of Smith, but like it just didn't land because one, and we're always comparing it to Hugo Weaving, but two, I think the rest of the movie just fell short, and so you know.
Yeah. I think he did as good of a job as he could have with what he was given.
In the context, yeah.
Yeah, I just wish they gave him better stuff. I don't know. It seems like they had enough, like...
Well, that's the through line, is that the stuff that... The choices they made were not choices we would have made, nor choices we agree with. But I think for what they... For the context of that, again, I'll say Jonathan Groff, I think, did a really good job.
That's the thing. It seemed like they were trying to do new characters, but then also do a lot of the callbacks. And I wish they would have just picked Elaine. You know,
but at least the callbacks were also just like very in your face and not as
you mean they
subtle
were playing
as
on a
other
movie
callbacks could have been
in the back of the
yeah. I mean,
yeah,
yeah. I think some of that was trying to like you know spark Neo and get him to remember. You know, they were trying to get it the same set. They're trying to get it the same. You know, here's the same. This is what happened. This is really your memories. Like this really happened. And so I think a lot of that was trying to like get Neo out of the Matrix. So I think that's why they made those directions. I don't think that was for the audience to be like, hey, this is the thing we used to do before. But yeah, I think this all sort of harkens back to that original theme line, which is, well, how do we get close enough to the original context in order for people to enjoy this as a Matrix movie while simultaneously going away from the original? Like, how do you get so close but not too close in order to ruin it? And so I think the through line for the movie itself, in terms of how the architect or the analyst is able to build the Matrix, really does come through in terms of how they were trying to build this movie. And I think that that's what we're trying to figure out is like, well, should they have been a little bit further apart or should they have been a little bit closer on these certain elements?
I guess that the analyst, you know, Matrix is meant to sort of be a, you know, in-universe version of the movie.
Right.
And I think his Matrix is pretty fucking stupid. And I think that reflects on the movie. Like, I don't know. It is the whole conceit of it is, again, like the whole conceit of it in universe seems made up out of nowhere. And it's like, you know, where they have to be close together. In outer universe, it seems out of nowhere. And also the choices he made with like to put a Smith in there, like that seems weird within the context of his thing and in the context of the movie. But Morpheus mostly exists. Even like when they do, like you said, I think someone mentioned the I Know Kung Fu scene, that's outside the Matrix, though, right? That's after they have Neo. They don't need to, like, remind him of shit at that
point. No, they did have to remind him of that, right? That was the whole dojo thing. It's like, he doesn't know how to do this, and then they try to train him back up. And that was the thing that I was saying before, is that I think they could have scrapped that whole thing, and then they could have just had him learn on the job. And during the exile scene, he could have gotten his ass whooped, and then, like, slowly but surely get back in.
I think they, from a stylistic standpoint, just thought, this was an iconic scene from the original movie that people will have nostalgia for and want to see. Because like even at the beginning, I was like, I guarantee you they're going to have him say, I know Kung Fu at some point in this movie.
100%.
Right. Like, I don't think you lose points for that. But like, I'm just like, so when he's doing the training scene, though, they have him in the white room, and then they have him in like the same sort of like the stylization of the dojo. Is like you can have all kinds of dojos, like, but it's meant to look very similar, you know. And it's like that stuff's for us, right? Like,
oh, 100%,
you know. And they have them looking at that little TV and all white room.
I 100% agree with you on there. I mean, the characters from the original movie that are undeniably the best is Morpheus and Agent Smith, right. And then what the movie is remembered for is, I think, twofold. One, it's all the set pieces, right? Like, I can remember that lobby scene with all of the police officers.
And the guns.
Oh my God. Just iconic. Just excellent, excellent scene. And then the rooftop scene where he, you know, does the windmill with the bullet time. I mean, that's what the Matrix is remembered for. But yeah, I mean, it comes back to, you know, do you fly a little too close to the sun? Do you try to bring those elements back? Do you try to do something totally different? Do you know what is a fourth movie look like? And I think reboots are hard. they just are inherently hard because everybody wants something different out of them. And then, you know, you get into the studio and as they were showing in the movie, right, it's built by committee. So everybody has like a different take of like, oh, I want this to be in it. I want that to be in it. I want this to be in it. And it's difficult to get like a unique original idea when you have to be constrained by all of the IP that you've like already created.
But like this movie only exists, right, to build off the old movie. You would never make this movie if the old movies didn't exist. You would just make a different, it might be a similar movie, but you would rewrite the script because there's no reason for the script to be this way without the constraints, right?
Exactly. Yep, 100%.
So the point of this movie, I think, would be like leverage the things that worked super well in the old ones, like leverage those things. And it seems like they didn't know what those things were somehow. Right? Like, as much as this movie talks about the legacy of the Matrix for the first 30 minutes, it's like, did they know what it was? Like, did they understand what people liked about it? Or like, did they have something new they wanted to do? Because it really seems like they put together the bad parts of the old movies. Like, that's what's confusing to me. It's like, they seem to like only play up the bad parts of the old movies. They like the fight scenes, there were not a lot of good fight scenes. If this movie had 5 good fight scenes in it, I think maybe like my opinion changes on it because at least I can walk away and be like, yeah, that's what the old movies were. Like, had some nice action scenes like that. Like the second Matrix movie is mostly remembered for its like highway scene, and it's the brawl
and the agent, vampires or whatever those are.
The ghosts and the werewolves and
whatever. Yeah,
the exiles, and then Agent Smith's fight with Neo in the courtyard. And people like that to varying degrees. But, like, it's known for those. In this one, like, is there a set piece anyone's going to remember? No. Like, right? Like, the motorcycle chase? Like, is anyone going to, like, go rewatch that? Like, I don't think so, right? Like, right? And it seems like, yeah. But if Keanu couldn't do it, get the fucking... Again, get Bug... She was a fucking sand snake. I mean, she was a sand snake.
You're right.
She was in Iron Fist. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that there's constraints to this, Josh, and I think that's fair. It's just like, but there's also a huge benefit of like this cultural. It's like you can't just like sort of like give them credit for working around the constraints, but not also be like they had so much like goodwill and interest from at least the first movie, and like the fact that these are still culturally relevant is like not again. It's not
significant.
Yeah, it's not insignificant. It's not insignificant as to why the movie was made. They comment on that. I don't know. It just like, there was never like, even though there was a fight on the train and I was never like, oh, this is like a cool fight. It was kind of like Shang-Chi. But like, they had a really cool fight on the bus, which I think, which would have been a,
yeah, that like was great. Interest,
which I think would have been like sort of a model for this train fight, like a corridor with sort of like, and that one didn't have like quite of a swarm, but he was fighting a few guys. And you're sort of dealing with, like, the environment changing, you know, because the bus is kind of falling apart at some point, I think. I'm trying to remember back. This one, like, the train opens up, and I know they throw someone out the window. Like,
would have been great if any of the team died on the train, but no.
Yeah.
Again, no.
Again, like, especially when you introduce all these disposable characters that you
right.
like, never seem to use later on. It
right.
seems like just have them die to raise the stakes a little bit.
Right.
Like, they could at least be good, but they don't do that. I don't know. It seems like, there was a lot of moments where, like, movies don't have to be predictable, you know, because, like, that's not the best thing. But it seems like when you're going to, like, not do the predictable thing, you want to do a better thing. And it seems like that's not what I got out of it. Like, when this movie didn't meet my expectations, like, even within a given scene, I was never like, oh, that's a cool change. I was like, oh, that's...
I made a comment with the fight scene with Smith that it was in like almost the same kind of, not subway, but downstairs kind of thing. I was like, oh, I really loved the scene in the first movie where he does kind of the Goro arms, you know, beats to the side, and then he did the exact same thing. Like, you couldn't...
I think they even showed the version from the old one, right? I mean, it was
I think so.
Like, yeah, so there was parts of it where it was just like so in hock to the old one. And I was just looking for it to elevate it. Like, was there a moment where you feel like it elevated from the old one?
I can't say there was.
Like, I mean, Josh, was there a moment where you feel like it really built off something in a cool way? Because, like, I think that's what you're going for with a reboot, right? Or, like, or a sequel. Well,
what do you think their intentions of making the movie was? Like,
okay,
do you
want to listen to Josh's opinion? Are we off that, Dave? What do you think?
No, I'm asking Josh.
Oh, you're asking Josh. Okay, good.
Like, why was the movie made?
Were you not watching the first 30 minutes? Warner Brothers.
I'm just going
to
quickly. Yeah, okay.
We're gonna make it with or without you, Warner.
Yeah, they were very explicit.
That was. Yeah, I mean, if you missed that part of the movie, that's difficult for me to address at this point.
Well, like,
one of the things that they elevated, and this was an elevation from the movies 2 and 3, because I thought that they got this right in movie 1. So, but what they elevated from the second and the third one is it was addition through subtraction, right? So there was a lot of monologuing and a lot of cerebral and a lot of like talking. You have the scene with the Oracle, you have the scene with the architect, you have a lot of just like, and they took all of that out of the fourth movie, which was great, because it was just sort of a shallower level of, okay, here's the analyst, he's built this world, he needs it because of the energy, they bring him close together because of this. It was a lot more straightforward than the second and the third ones, and it was kind of like... similar to the Star Wars movie, right? Where the first Star Wars, where they have all of the politics, and that's, most people's least favorite part of the first movie. Yeah. So what I'm saying is this movie was better than Matrix 2 and 3 insofar as they took all of that out, all of that, like, cerebral monologuing, if you will.
And then you're right. I think the second and third one had a ton of those speeches too. And to me, actually, and I think sort of in line with what Dave was saying, like, it begs the question of, like, what do they think? So, like, after they made the first one, it seemed like they thought people liked that stuff, like the sort of, here's us sort of, doing philosophical musings on things. And I think after watching this second and third, people were like, no, we didn't like those. Don't do that. And then the fourth one, I think it's true enough that they didn't do as much of that, although I guess I feel like the first bullet time scene with the architect or the hell is it called? Sorry, the analyst. I feel like that was sort of their version of this in this one. But I think you're right, there was less of it. The first half an hour of the movie, though. Like, it was all just sometimes it didn't. And I think you're like in sort of the second half of the movie, there was less of the sort of stopping dead and philosophizing, I guess. But I think there still was a good amount of it. Like, even the whole going into the Matrix thing with, like, talking to Morpheus and, like, I understand why that happens for the plot, but it's like you made the plot necessitate all this, like, philosophical stuff that I think is an interesting part of the Matrix. It's just, like, less interesting when it's just two characters saying it.
The cipher and the stake scene, which I actually really enjoy.
Like, that scene was, like, that was a good version of it. Maybe it was just a lot of it. And I think this did better, but you're hoping to elevate the action, maybe, like, because that's the Matrix was groundbreaking for the action, right? Do you think they're making a fifth one? Is that a thing? Does anyone know?
I think
this one flopped.
Movie, they will make a fifth.
Well, yeah, I don't think they did. So I think they had a $200 million budget. They hit half of that. But I also don't think that theaters was truly where they were looking to make the money.
It came out on HBO Max. So we watched HBO Max, and it came out there at the same time.
So that's all about, like, propping up a streaming service. And you'll find that Disney does the same thing, where they don't even go to the theaters with a lot of their new Pixar movies. Like, Encanto wasn't even in theaters, I don't think. But it's just a mechanism for getting more subscribers and to keep more subscribers and to keep that, cash train going.
Okay,
so,
then let me rephrase. If they made the... either, I guess, marketing, financial, whatever their goal in part of making the movie was, if they accomplish that, I think they will do another one.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually how business works. But yeah, I agree.
Well, but they didn't do this for 20 years, right? So, I mean, they will do another one within the next 2 or 3 years.
Do you think they'll come out with another one?
So I'm sort of wondering where you think it would go from here.
If maybe that's when they start developing the new characters.
That's certainly possible.
I don't know.
It's as good a time as any, I guess. But like, why? So actually, the ending. I don't know if we've talked about this. What the fuck is the ending?
Like when they go back and talk to the architect?
Yeah. Why aren't they just destroying the Matrix?
So they can't destroy the Matrix because you can't leave the Matrix unless you request to leave the Matrix. So that your mind has to be. You have to believe it is a matrix so that you can transcend to the real world. That's the whole reason they can't just pull Trinity out or the reason they can't just shut it down. All those people will die.
But you need a mind bridge.
Yeah, you have to be willing to leave. That's anything like
right. You have to be willing to leave. So I think what they're trying to do, and you know, I don't know because they don't really go into the specifics of this, would be to recreate the Matrix so that it becomes more of a bridge to the real world, so that you know the people are able to leave.
When they say they're going to rebuild it, though, in the Matrix, I mean, listen, I guess political commentaries aside, the Matrix appears to just be much like our real world, right? Like, So it's not meant to be like some oppressive, well, I mean, again, any more than, you know, the whatever, something, capitalism, whatever, is oppressive. But, like, it's just meant to be, like, the world. So when they said they're going to rebuild it, I sort of wonder, like, how? Like, what's Neo's philosophy on how the world should work differing from the current version that they're living? Like,
right, and that's the analyst's whole point. And that's actually one of the things that I really did enjoy about this movie was the analyst's point of view on, and you're right, there's a lot of, you know, allegories to the real world on this, where he said, in my Matrix, and I'm just going to pull up this quote, he goes, in my Matrix, the worse we treat you, the more we manipulate you, the more energy you produce. It's nuts. I've been setting productivity records every year since I took over, and the best part is zero resistance. People stay in their pods, happier than pigs and shit. And then he goes...
He talks about desire and fear.
There we go, the desire and fear. Yeah, do you have that pulled up? Because I like that quote a lot.
I don't, but I will echo your sentiment because I did write that the speech about desire and fear was something I actually did like.
Here we go. So they're quietly yearning for what you don't have while dreading losing what you do, desire and fear. So I like that. I like that quite a bit.
Okay, so but how do you feel that plays into the movie?
Right, so it's all about like the choice to live in the Matrix, right? The choice to live in the fake world. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, parallels to social media, right? You can choose to live in the, you know, the fake world of Instagram or Facebook or...
I guess you can draw parallels to 1,000 different things, right? That's a loss aversion. These are all things, right? But like, what is the movie specifically saying about that, I guess?
I think it's pretty explicitly saying it about that, right? There's the whole scene in the elevator where Neo is looking around and everybody's on their phones, right? I think the parallels to this movie and being trapped in the Matrix and being trapped in your phone and looking at it for hours and hours on end and being trapped in this fake world of, you know, whether it's the metaverse coming up or whether it's, you know, it's just plain social media. I think the whole crux of the movie is saying, you know, all of these people, they're sheep. They're living in this fake reality. And okay, they're happy there. And
I would say social media is probably missing the mark there then.
Why?
Because I would say it's more about entertainment media.
Okay.
If it's a commentary on anything at all, I think it'd be entertainment media where he makes video games and they make movies and this is a return to an old franchise that we love and we're so like in hock to those worlds. Like I think that would be the commentary they're making.
I think both can be true. I think both can
be true. Yeah, I can say for both, quite
I think
honestly.
Both can be true. I just don't think they... Social media doesn't really play into this movie very much.
Well, I think it's, you know, it is a Matrix in and of itself. It's just a fake world, right? And people log into it, and then they interact in
right,
it,
but it,
and it's not
I think
reality.
What he's saying is, I think what he's saying is it's not like Thomas Anderson works for a social media company. Like, it's not being...
No, it's not that explicit.
No, I'm just saying the parallel works... If I'm from the outside looking in at the movie, like, but I think you can port that. But I think what is the movie trying to say it about? I think would have to be the entertainment media because it connects with the first one, right? Like it connects the first like bit of the movie when they're sort of talking about, you know, why movies get made and what people want to see in movies.
I think it's a commentary on people don't want freedom, right? So people want comfort. And so if you can get people, it's just like the way that people stay in their jobs, right? Like, I hate my job. I hate my job. I hate my job. Well, why don't you leave? Well, you know, I have fear about what would happen if I leave my job. I have fear about what would happen if I don't make any more money. I have fears. And then, you know, on the other flip side, it's like, well, I don't leave my job because I hope to get promoted. I hope to make more money. I hope to get another job, and by using this job on my resume, I hope to get more things. And so it's a commentary on, you know, why people do the things they do, why people choose comfort over freedom.
Yeah, it's very comfortable in the hamster wheel and be in the grind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's just so, I don't know, it feels so nonspecific. My question
is,
like,
they bring up the hamster wheel thing a bunch, like,
yeah, they got the treadmill
in the sense of, like, yeah, with the treadmills and everyone's on the treadmills and, like, going through that whole montage, like, it's just the grind.
Yeah, that's the whole Alice in Wonderland grind, or that theme music plays throughout the whole time.
Because I don't understand that. So, like, but like, my question is, what is Neo? How is Neo going to remake the world at the end? Like, what is the change? Oh,
that I couldn't tell you.
What is the? It feels like one thing we should know, right? Is what the change Neo and Trinity are going to make at the end? Like, their day one, what's their agenda, right? Now that they're benevolent dictators of this world.
Here's the thing: I don't think you want to watch that movie, right? Like, I wouldn't watch that movie.
No, I don't want to see it as a movie. I just feel like walking away from this movie, I should know what their day one agenda is.
I think generally they're trying to bridge people from the fake world to the real world. I don't know if I want to watch the, like, design plans and they bring out, like, some sort of blueprint and they go, like, okay, here's philosophically how we want
to. I'm not saying the movie should explicitly tell me that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying I feel like I should know why, like, what their philosophy of how the world should be should differ from the architects.
Right. I don't know that we know the answer to the problem, right?
I feel like the movie should tell us that.
Like, what are they fighting for now that they can accomplish that? What are they going to do with that?
Like, so the end of Ready Player One, when they take over the Matrix, they say, we closed it down on Mondays and Thursdays or whatever, so people would go hang out in the real world.
Because they need to make they want to make the real world better because everyone is spending their time in the
so
Matrix.
Their version is, yeah, people spend too much time in the Matrix, or the, what's it called?
Oasis.
The Oasis. And we need them to focus more on the real world, so we decided to shut it down for a couple days so people focus on the real world. Obviously, the mechanics of this version are a little different. But, like, the version of that, when they take over the Matrix in this, we're in control now, we're going to pull everyone out, you're going to lose all your power. Like, if that was the speech, I'd be like, okay. But the speech is, we're going to make some changes around here, then I'm just like, okay, so, like, what are those changes? And I just don't know. And, like, I feel like I should know how their philosophy differs. Like, your philosophy can't just be like, oh, everyone's stuck on a hamster wheel, and then be like, okay, so what do you want to do instead? And they're like, oh, I don't know, but the hamster wheel
different thing seems... hamster wheel.
Yeah, I don't know. I just feels like I should know how their philosophy differs, and I don't. Maybe the movie had it. I'm wondering if anyone got it, and I just didn't pick up on it.
The movie certainly could have done more talking, and it certainly could have done more with Neo and Trinity sitting down in a chair and having a, you know, rational conversation with the analyst and the, you know, coming up with, like, a new solution to the Matrix. I just wouldn't have wanted to watch that movie. You know?
No, but, oh, see, like, I just don't want more of that. I feel like you're reading this so literally, though. I don't think they need to sit down and, like, lay out their agenda, but, like,
walking away from the movie.
I should know their thesis on what's wrong with the world specifically. Yeah, I don't know. I think the last scene of the movie just makes it... I feel like that makes the movie make less sense to me. Like, so, like Josh has said, if they just want to pull people out over time, that's one thing. It seems like they want to perpetuate the Matrix, but change it. And that's what confuses me. If, in fact, Josh is right and they just want to, you know, facilitate pulling people out, That makes sense to me, but I just think the last scene sort of muddled that for me, in that it seemed like they were sort of fine with the existing, in the same way in Ready Player One, they don't shut down the Oasis. They're fine with the existence of it, but they want to make a compromise, sort of.
You know, what's interesting about that, though, is that that might actually be true. I haven't really thought a ton about that ending scene until now, and so it's possible they do want to perpetuate the hamster wheel while continuously slowly pulling people out of it. And here's why. So if they break the Matrix, right, then all of the energy for the machines that won the Civil War goes away. And then they are going to, you know, freak out, and they're going to go on high patrols trying to find Io and destroy it and then build a new Matrix kind of thing. Right. So because they'll need new human bodies in order to feed it. Whereas if you keep the old Matrix as is while slowly pulling people out of it, you can do, or at least those people who want to be pulled out of it, you can do both things at the same time. You can, one, pull the people out of the Matrix who want to be pulled out of the Matrix, and two, keep the peace between the machines and the people in the real world, because they continue to have the source of power that they need in order to be in their own space.
Right. Does it taper off until they pull everyone out?
I
Couldn't tell.
And then what? The machines all die?
What they would do is they would try to find the people in the real world in order to create a new matrix in order to get their energy again.
At the end of the third Matrix, given this movie, did Neo actually kill the Matrix and then they later restarted it? Or did they never kill the Matrix?
Well, the Matrix by that point had already been like completely destroyed by Agent Smith. Not like the Matrix itself so much as like he as a virus like populated right. It. Yeah.
I don't know. My question is just like are they just trying to taper off the Matrix, or are they sort of like, because it'd be very, very strange to me. Very, very strange. If Neo and Trinity's like ending thesis was like, well, I guess we do need some people on the hamster wheel in order to maintain
peace,
the Matrix in peace. It's important that we have, I don't know, people serving in, I don't know, the capitalist exploitative economy or something.
But maybe that is the message.
Yeah, I think that is the message. I think that's exactly the message, because I think that there are people who are happier to be in that world, and that's the whole crux of the Exiles as well. And like Cypher's whole thing is, I think, you know, you keep the people in who want to be in, and then help to protect their sacrifice, or, you know, lack thereof, given that they want to be there anyway, helps preserve the peace with the humans in the real world. And then you pull the people out who want to be out, even though it's a harsher reality.
I don't know. It just seems weird having the heroes of your movie be like, some people need to be, you know, drones and whatever.
No, I don't know. It's like needs to me so much as just freedom of choice, right? That's the whole red pill, blue pill thing, is you just provide them with the choice.
But again, like, otherwise we could shut down. But like, is there a plan to try to pull everyone out and just leave whoever wants? But if everyone opted out tomorrow, would they be fine shutting down this Matrix?
I don't know.
And that would start war with the machine, or that would cause the machines to, you know, start a war again, right? Like, is that their goal? Or would that be like the best case scenario, is everyone opts out or whatever?
I just think this is a very long-term thing, right? Because it's not as simple as just like setting up a vaccine center and having someone take a red pill. The red pill is, and they mention this in the movie, it has nothing to do with the pill itself. It's just presenting someone with the choice, and then if they take the red pill, that means they've already made that choice in their head. And so like getting people in the real world, and imagine it exactly in this world as well. Imagine your job, right, is to go around and convince people they're living in a false reality. Mm-hmm. People would be like, no, I've seen that movie. It's called The Matrix. You're being ridiculous. So I think this is a very, you know, long, 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 long term plan that they have here. And slowly but surely.
So what changes are they going to make in the meantime?
I have no idea what their game plan is here.
Okay. It just seems like if none of us know what changes they're going to make, having a scene where they come and say, we're going to make some changes around here, is a little bit incredibly dumb. It's like a bad way to end the movie if it's not clear like what the purpose of those changes are going to be, I guess. That is like a big triumphant moment, and I don't know the manner in which they're triumphing. I don't know. It seems like a dog chasing the car moment in a way that it doesn't seem like it's supposed to. Like, it doesn't seem like the point is like, oh, they got control of this, but doesn't make a difference. Like, because that could be a movie too. Like, they take control of the Matrix, but they don't know how to pull everyone out.
But that's the whole analyst's point, right? He actually makes that point. So they say like, ah, we have control now. And the analyst goes like, control of what? You can make the sky full of rainbows. It's not going to change a thing. People are happy here. I've made them happy here.
So okay, like, but then what? But then they're like, we're going to make some changes. And you're like, okay, but like, is he right? Or like,
right. He might be right.
Is he right?
He might be, but we don't know. Like, it ends open-ended. It's kind of like Inception, where they have the spinning top. Like, you don't know if the top stops spinning or not. That's the end of the movie. There are movies that...
They made that scene. You know, the scene didn't happen to them. Things can be open-ended, but, like, a blank sheet of paper is open-ended. Like, what they want to do with this Matrix power. But then they fly away as, like, it's not like he says that and they're just like, oh, shit, he's right. Well, maybe we should, you know, reevaluate our entire, like, lives here. Like... It's like they still triumphant. They slap him around a little bit and then they fly away, right? Is that I'm trying to get there on this and I can't. And again, I don't, this, you know, these are the movies where like you just don't know. Like maybe they're too clever for me. You know, maybe I just don't get. Like, I'm sure there's like a video essayist out somewhere who's answering all these questions in a way that like, oh, it actually makes sense.
I have no problem chalking this up to a nephew.
Like, how much are you like sort of goodwill towards this movie is based on the earlier movies. So
I honestly think it would be better as a standalone story. So really? I think I came in with it's negative, you know, because
really? Okay.
the Matrix to me is, you know, I really like the original Matrix, right. And that's a large reason why I also really hate the sequels is, you know, it is the Matrix, which is a great movie, and then they ruin it, and it's just I've seen them do it well, and it's just frustrating that they can't capture that magic again and again and again. So they keep falling up short. So for me, you know, maybe someone who only saw the Matrix Resurrections, I maybe they like it better. It's certainly possible. I haven't met anyone, honestly, who hasn't seen the original Matrix, or at least when that comes up, who has, you know, admitted to that, I guess. But like if we could find that person and we can have them watch the Resurrections, I think that would be an interesting, you know, see whether or not they'd enjoy it.
I do wonder if I don't think my parents or grandparents or whatever would like this movie.
Right.
Anyways, but I wonder, they might not have seen The Matrix, or at least probably don't have the nostalgia that we do for
it. I genuinely believe they would not understand it. Not your parents, just like a person who just didn't see any of the other ones. I think they would just be very confused.
Yeah, I mean, so I think there's a version of this movie where you trim down on a lot of the callbacks and stuff, and you make this as a standalone story, and that might be
better than this. But I think this one person would just be very confused.
Yeah, I think this, if you haven't seen the original movies, all the callbacks, like,
who the hell Smith?
You might get them, but I don't think you get anything out of them, right? It's hard when, you know,
but think about all the twists, right? For someone who's never seen the original movies and doesn't know anything about the red pill or the blue pill, doesn't know anything about the Matrix, doesn't know anything about Agent Smith, doesn't know anything about Morpheus, right? Think about all the things you would have to not know about. And then the twist of like, oh my God, like it actually is a different world. Right?
Like as soon as I saw like Neil Patrick Harris with the blue sunglasses and giving Neo the prescription of the blue pills, like I knew what that meant. But it definitely has a different impact on someone who has no reference for the Matrix. So I could see that. It'd be weird, but I could see it.
It's the whole crux of what makes doing a reboot so difficult is you have now two separate sets of audiences, right? But it's not marketed as Matrix 4. It's just marketed as Matrix Resurrections, right? Like, if you hadn't seen the original trilogy, you might just go into this movie and say, like, oh, it's on HBO Max. I'm just going to throw this on. And then you'd be like, huh, okay.
I mean,
if you're someone who hasn't seen the original trilogy, right? Like, that's possible.
I don't know. It'd be very difficult.
I mean, there's a whole generation that wasn't born when the original movie came out.
Yeah, right? But it's not like the original movie was lost to time. I mean, no, if you're like, looking for archive footage, you could watch 30 minutes of this movie and piece a lot of it together. I mean,
but you said yourself that like most 80s movies you've just never seen because you don't care for them, and that was before you were born. Right,
like, but like I don't share that opinion. Like, but I mean, I didn't go watch the new.
Statistically,
I don't think that's what I said.
The new Jaws.
Yeah, statistically,
the old one. Okay. In defense of Trevor's point, I did watch Serenity before I knew it was based on, or like the like finishing of Firefly.
I did the same thing. I watched Serenity and I had no idea it was Firefly. Yep.
Yeah, I feel like this is like a cultural phenom in a way that a TV show that got canceled after one season isn't.
Sure, and I'm not saying they are equivalent, but it's just like...
No, I'm sure it's possible that someone will... I think this movie would be so inaccessible to someone who hasn't seen the first one, in a way that, like, even if the twist was cool... But, you know what? I'm going to disagree even harder, because the twist of the original... Even if you haven't seen the... It's the... What do you call it? It was his sled moment, right? Like, that even if you haven't seen the original Matrix, the twist of the original Matrix is so in the culture. Being a big enough property that you can get a $140 million budget is kind of like, you know, it's a challenge, but there's also like so much that comes with it. And if this is your output, it's like
certain expectations,
you know.
So are we doing letter grades or like scale 1 to 10 or number of uncles? Like, how are we rating this?
No.
What is your scale?
The uncles are people with good takes. Nephews are people with bad takes. You might be in the nephew category somehow, because I feel like you are the person in this thing who makes my argument seem worse by saying shit that doesn't make any goddamn sense. You know, when you like why did they make this movie? Even though that was like a 30-minute section of the movie, and you just make it seem like my criticism is vapid by you making these.
But then you came back to it and said, to Dave's point, why did they make the movie?
The point being is that, I mean, I think it's the worst movie I've ever seen.
Well, it's not even an uncle-nephew scale, because a nephew is a unit of measure.
Two nephews.
Okay, out of how many? What's the nephew? That is not how the nephew scale works. So what, you should at least explain your own scale if you're going to make one up.
That's all I will say on the matter.
Okay, so you give it two nephews.
I don't know if I could. I'd just be like, well, it didn't. Well, because it's like all we talked about. It didn't do enough. Like if someone was like, oh, I really like the first Matrix movie. Right. I don't know if I would say, oh, well, here's another Matrix movie you should watch.
So, Trugger, you liked it more, like, so you would recommend someone watch this?
No. I'm in the exact same category as Larry is here, right?
Wait, but like, if you were to like stare at a wall and watch this movie, what would you do? Because I
would watch the movie over staring at a wall.
No, see, I don't feel that.
Yet. I would like it to be known that
I don't feel the same way about this movie as you do, Dave.
I'm not going to sit here and defend Bumblebee, because that's... But to defend Bumblebee for a moment... I do.
And then before we get there, though, because that's going to be another 4.5 hours, I just want to, real quick, Commissar, I just want your take on this. It sounds as though it was a negative experience for you. I want to know, is it the worst movie you've ever seen?
It's amongst them. Only because genuinely I watch movies to be entertained and I did not feel entertained.
No, I get that you weren't entertained. I don't think I was entertained either. But so like, among the worst movies you've ever seen.
Was worsely made, part of the grammar, than The back. Room, for
maybe
example? Not,
maybe I'm
among
speaking
Among the 10 worst movies you've ever seen.
Huh?
Among the 10 worst movies you've ever seen. If you were going to make a list of the worst movies. Like, it doesn't have to be the absolute worst. But
yeah, maybe.
Because for me, it's at the bottom. It's number one, then Bumblebee. Than Endgame, in that order. I'd rather watch them.
But that's a whole other level.
I don't even think it's the worst movie in the Matrix series. Like, Convasar, would you watch this movie versus like the last Matrix, the third?
I can't accurately speak to that because I did not rewatch the series before watching this.
Okay. But,
and so thinking back, it's like, even as a kid, those came out in like 1999 through 2000.
Right.
You know, five, and I enjoyed the, you know, action.
You liked the sequels.
Yeah, but I was
when I was a kid, I liked the sequels.
Huh, okay.
I
never did.
To say, like, I think this was than Bumblebee, I enjoyed the first 2 minutes of Bumblebee with on Cybertron. I think Hailee Steinfeld's a good actress. I think there was some, like, moments where I laughed in Bumblebee. There's 5 minutes of Bumblebee that, like, I didn't, you know, I enjoyed. And Bumblebee is a movie that's an hour and, sorry, 114 minutes long. This is a even longer movie, I think. This is, what, 148 minutes. So, what, almost 2.5 hours, right? Is it, like, is it less enjoyable to watch? Like, is it worse made? No. Like, I mean, obviously the cinematography or whatever in the special effects is better than something like The Room. Not that any of the acting or whatever, but, like, it's hard to judge that non-ironically. But even, like, The 12 Pups of Christmas, like, there were just literally moments of that I enjoyed more than any moment in this movie. Like, the stupidity in that movie was more fun than this movie, where it felt more frustrating. You know, like, obviously it's not like everyone who made this movie was an incompetent idiot. Like, I'm not trying to be, like, super critical. And, like, obviously they made the first Matrix. Like, I think they have some cool stuff. And, again, they've done cool action in John Wick. Obviously Keanu can do that. I've seen, you know, Keanu and Carrie Ann Moss and Groff and Neil Patrick Harris and, you know, Jada Pinkett even, and other stuff. The guy who played Morpheus, I think I've only seen him in Aquaman. Jessica Henwick, I don't remember her in anything that I've seen, but I have seen. I'm sure she can act. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Yeah, it was great to be here. It was fun to talk with you guys.
You have to come back for the next episode. You